All right. First of all, thank you, Robert Kornfeld, and Ian Nadav for inviting me to talk about Inyo Nesota. The topic chosen is relating mainly to the second Perek of Maseches Sota, but in particular to the unusual ingredients which go up to make the Tahara of the Sota. One could start off by saying we aren't permitted to ask any questions about mitzvahs, and that is in generally true. We accept mitzvahs because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them to do them, and we don't ask why they should work. However, there's an important rule that where the Torah uses the word chok, making it into a statute, that really means it is a chok and ought not to be investigated, because it is something which is divinely given and not for us to necessarily understand properly. For example, the Poro Adum is the prime example of a chok, which even Moshe Rabbeinu was unable to fathom in detail. However, where the Torah does not use the word chok, then it is permitted to try to analyze the mitzvah in order to get lessons from it, provided we realize that we may not necessarily get to the bottom of it. We still are allowed to try to draw messages from it. Now, that particular issue is set out in the Or HaChaim in Parashas Noso regarding the mitzvah of Sota, and he says that because there's no word chok used in the Torah in connection with the Sota, it is actually commendable to try to find out what we can learn from the process. And the first question which strikes us immediately is that the Sota has done something which is considered to be pretty heinous. She's broken the orders of her husband and she's gone off and in circumstances which is to say the least suspicious, and she deserves to be punished. Now, she is allowed a way out because there may be mitigating circumstances or whatever the reason that she might have done it, but surely it should have been sufficient for her just to be given an oath and please swear that you didn't do what you did, and if she takes that shavua, then the process should be sufficient. Why is it that we need these additional features? In particular, we need water, we need earth, and we need a sefer. A sefer being the Megillas Sota, which we'll come back to later to discuss its contents. You have to put these three things together and make a concoction which is more bizarre than an intoxicating mixture of beverages. Why specifically does she have to drink this concoction? What's it all about? In addition, in describing the items, we are told that the mayim, the water, are both kadoshim. If you look at Pasuk, it is Pasuk Yud Zayin in chapter Hay of Parshas Noser. It says there, V'lokach ha-kohen mayim kadoshim. It's going to be holy water. What difference does it make whether the waters are holy or not? And why are they specifically described as kadoshim when, as at the same time, in Pasuk Yud Tes, they describe as mehamorim, bitter waters? So it seems that they are both holy, but at the same time, bitter. Is that not somewhat of a paradox, that you've got the waters which are both holy and yet bitter at the same time? The Torah is describing that, there's got to be some reason for it. And then when we come to the offer, the Pasuk says, Mino offer asheyia bekarka mishkan. It's not any earth you take. You can't just go out into the street and bring any earth along. It's got to be special earth, which has been in the karka mishkan, on the ground of the mishkan. And from the Gemara, it's clear that this has got to be the topsoil. It can't be dug from deep below. Now, what is the significance of that? Why should that earth have to be brought as well, and why has it to be mixed? Moreover, it's clear that the earth has to be put on top of the water. What difference does it make whether the water goes in first or the earth goes in first? There seems to be some significance in that particular process. And when that's been done, the next thing you have to do is to get the Megillas Sota, and you've got to mash it up and push it into the water so that it becomes all sort of liquidized, and she drinks from that potion. We've got to understand why all that needs to be done. Now, I want to present to you three different approaches Perhaps we'll start with the simplest approach. We'll do it on a simplistic level. Rabbeinu Bachya, usually mispronounced Rabbeinu Bachaya. Rabbeinu Bachya, he wrote the most remarkable sefer way ahead of his times on the Chumash. It's a well-known sefer, very, very loved sefer, and it deals with Chumash in many different aspects. He talks about things literally, then he talks about Alpi Kabbalah and Alpi Medrash. He gives an explanation in a simplistic fashion. He says very simply, this woman has done a heinous act. She's broken the basic tenets of the Torah, and we have a klal that the heaven and the earth are Eden, as we find in afterwards in Devarim Ha'azinu. We're told about the heavens and the earth are going to be brought as Eidos. So his suggestion is that the heavens will be represented by the water which come from the heaven. Obviously we know there are water in the sea as well, but water basically comes down from the clouds, the rainwater, and therefore that is the representation of Tala Shomayim. And then you've got the Eretz is the Shemaneh Ha'oretz, so the water from above with the earth from below have to be mixed, and the earth is put on top of the water, because it's the Seder is going to be such that she sort of converted the way she operated by putting the earth before the heavens, so to speak. So we put the heavens in first and the earth on top, and they will give the Eidos. And obviously we need something significant to make this work, and what better to make it work than the words of the Torah from the Parsha of the Sota, which, so to speak, galvanize the Edim of the heavens and the earth. It's a nice simple explanation, and it deals with the general reason why we need these items. The Orach Chaim, who is a most remarkable Perush, is accepted completely both by Ashkenazim and the Sfardim, even though he was a Sfardi, even though it's perhaps the wrong expression. He came from Morocco, and then wonderful stories told about his life. It's recorded that he had a similar experience to Daniel Ish Chamudas. Daniel was in the lion's den, and apparently the Orach Chaim himself was once in the lion's den in similar circumstances, and he escaped through his emunah. He's accepted as a Baal Kabbalah, but his perish on the Chumash is a superb perish, both the Miderech Hanista and also from the Derech of Pshat and grammar and so forth. It's a sefer which is very, very much used and very, very accepted. People don't know this, but he wrote a Sforim on Shas as well. He wrote a sefer Rishon LeZion on Brachos and Moed. And his Sephorim are highly acclaimed. Now, he deals with the subject from what he calls the Pnimius HaTorah. Pnimius HaTorah means a deeper appreciation, the inner purpose. And he goes into the objects and explains their background. He said, everything is trying to get back to its makor. Everything is trying to get back to its origins in life. That's part of how nature was created. What happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Master Bereshis, the initial creation? He created water, and he created earth, and he divided the two. Water was in fact in all one object, and then he separated into upper waters and to the lower waters. The upper waters are the waters which are in the heavens, and they were very happy to be there. They want to be close to the Creator. Obviously, we're talking in deeper terms, as I said, Pnimius HaTorah, not literally, but clearly there is a deeper message. And in the deeper form of things, the water in the heavenly department was considered to be closer to the divine, and it was very happy with itself. However, the lower waters, which were put into the sea and earth, they were not so happy at all. They felt that they'd been thrown away into oblivion. They had to deal with human beings who are not quite at the same madrega as the divine, and they complained. Well, it's well known that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them certain compensations. He said to them, look, you'll be used for Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkos when everybody gets back to the high madrega. You'll also be used for the salt on the a Mizbeach, and that sog will obviously have to be taken from the water, and therefore you will be acknowledged that you will work on earth. But having said that, the lower waters still are yearning to get back to the divine in heaven. Just by the way of interest, I once heard a most remarkable thing. You'll find, certainly in European languages, I'm not capable of telling what the position is in Chinese or Indian languages, but the word water seems to be connected with the word what, ma. You take, for example, English, you have water is the same as what. You take Latin, qua is the same as aqua. Qua means what, aqua means water. You take German, was is das, you have Wasser, meaning water. It seems that the original water was something which is like the mon, which is all nourishing, and people were asking, now what is this? But the interesting thing is that maim is always in the plural. It's not ma. Ma is what in Hebrew? The plural is maim. Now maim is always a duality, just like we have parts of the body, raglayim, garbayim, yodayim, sosayim. All the dual parts are in what's called the dual form, which is like the a-e sound. The a-e sound is a form of segulate, which is normally air, but it has the same sort of rules. The idea being that the a-e sound doesn't create an absolute plural, it creates a duality. So you have lots of droshes on the difference between, for example, in Mishle you have a pasuk which says drochaim, in one sentence it has the word drochaim, and the Malbim gives a whole long explanation of what are these two drachim, as distinct from the normal plural, which would be drachim. And similarly you have in certain places sfosayim, but you also find sifsos, and there's an enormous difference between the two, because sifsosayim means the ordinary lips which we have, which is duality, and sifsos is the general plural, or you can have a masculine form as well, like sifsei, but which is construct. But anyhow, what I'm trying to get at here is the mayim is clearly a duality. There were two waters. And this seems to lead back to the creation story where there were, in fact, two separate waters. The mayim ho'elyonim and mayim ha'tachtonim. So we have here perhaps one of the proofs for the origin of the Hebrew language being the holy language, the original language. People of Rabbi Glazerson wrote a whole book on the sparks of the holy tongue, and this, I don't know whether he mentions this particular word, I'd be surprised if he didn't, but this is an example of how the Torah is the divine holy language from the outset. So you see these two waters, the Mayim HaTachtonim and Mayim HaElyonim, and the lower waters are trying to get back to heaven. Now, that's the water side of things. As far as the Ofor is concerned, the earth represents the counterparts to the water, I suppose. It's the place on in this world where the water representing the not all that different from what Rabbeinu Bachya is saying, but she has to be brought. We have to bring earth in order to show the other side of the divine, of the Panimus HaTorah, as distinct from the water in the heavenly sphere. But the earth has to be such an earth which is imbued with holiness. That's the whole point, according to Rabbeinu Bachya. It's not good enough just to bring heaven and earth. You have to bring the earth of the holy part of the world. Now, the holiest part of the world is the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, and therefore you have to bring earth from there, and that's why it has to be loose topsoil, because once you get further down, it's sort of disconnected from the Mishkan itself. The soil which is on the top, which people tread on, and that is the earth which forms the ground of the Mishkan itself. Now, there's an old argument in Shas, not in Shas so much, but in the Mephoshim, as to what was the basis of the floor of the Mikdosh. And in one place we're told it was marble, another place it looks as though it was gold, and another place it looks as though it's wood. There's a lot of different discussion, and it seems at different times in different parts had different coverings. But whatever those coverings were, the top of the natural ground below that would have been earth. And that has to be taken to show that we are having the item which is closest to the holiness of Hashem. So we're bringing those two items, the item of water, which was, here we're talking about the sort of the heavenly water, together with the heavenly earth, and that has got to be put together in order to prove what this woman has done, which is she's counterbalanced the Kedusha of the world. She's done a heinous crime, or may have done a heinous crime, and therefore she's sort of been merachek, she's pushed away the divinity, the divine things on earth, rather than bringing the holy water and the holy earth together. How is that then put into one piece? It's bound together by the Sefer, which is the Kodesh Baruch Hu's name, which gets coagulated into this particular mixture. Now, we mentioned before the problem why it's called Mayim Kedoshim and Mayim Morim. It now becomes clear, called the Erachayim, that there have to be the holy waters, because this is the antidote to her anti-holiness. She has been a person who has pushed aside holiness in what she did. She hadn't kept in any way the holy ways, and instead we are bringing water to show that we want to prove that holiness should triumph, and that's why it's called the Mayim Kedoshim. But at the same time, there are Mayim Morim as well, because they have got to deal with the particular bitter experience which they're coming to deal with. He goes a little bit further. He says, really, the holy parts of the universe are embittered by what this woman has done, and therefore they are feeling like crying. They themselves wish to show their distress at what's gone on, and therefore the Mayim Kedoshim are at the same time Mayim Morim, because they are distressed, together with the holy earth, the holy water, and the holy Sefer. That is the explanation in outline of the Or HaChaim. There is a third explanation, which in fact is a very venerable source. It comes actually from the Yerushalmi itself. The Yerushalmi is, as everyone knows, the counterpart to the Bavli. The Bavli was the Talmud which we now have from Bavel, but there was a civilization of Judaism in the Eretz Yisrael which had its own explanations of the Mishnah. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan, who's mentioned in the Bavli as the greatest of the Amoraim, was also the Morod Yerushalmi, and they have their own Amoraim. And the Yerushalmi in Sota, chapter Beis, Mishnah Halacha Beis, bases its explanation on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, chapter Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. The Mishnah in Avos, as everybody probably knows, Akavya ben Mahalalel Oimer, Histakir b'shlosha devorim v'ein ator bo lidei aveira. Have a look at three things, and that will prevent you from doing a sin. What are the three things? Dameayin bosa, look back where you come from. Lo'on atorich, look where you are going to. V'lifnei mi ator osid litein din v'cheshvan, and for whom you're going to have to give your account. May I embossa, so where did you come from? Mitipos surucho, from a very moist, wet drop. Don't be such a bad guy, but don't think that you're such a don't be such an arrogant person. You really come from a very, very lowly background, and therefore you've got nothing to be proud or arrogant about. Similarly, Luliana Tahilich, look where you're going to go. Limakom ofar rima vasole, you're going to go to a place of dust, worms, and oblivion. It's the Gemara itself says that a person who has a virus, or starts getting high and mighty or arrogant, yaskir yom hamisa, he has to mention or remind himself of the day of his death. And I can tell you, I'm a member of the Chevra Kedisha. And you know, you see people, unfortunately, who were important. You see all sorts of people, but at the end of the day, they'll all go to Olam Haba, but they have no further part in this world. So all these minor petty disputes and squabbles which go on, I often say to people, come with me to the Chevra Kedisha next time, but there won't be a next time, but next time it will happen. Come with me and then we'll see whether you want to continue with your arguments or not. And it has a very, very salutary effect. Life is, say in the English expression, life is too short to start getting arguments and fighting with other people. If people should get that message, it would be very valuable. And this is in fact what Akavim Ben Mahalalel is saying. Finally says, if those two things are not sufficient, where you've come from a nothing, and where you're going to a nothing, remember, we're not going to a nothing, your physical body is going to a nothing, your spiritual body is going to go to Nitzchus afterwards. But then he says, "Lifnei miyato osed lidei din v'cheshbon." Yes, your spiritual body is going to go to Nitzchus, provided you remember before whom you're going to stand. You're not going to stand before any old body, you're going to stand lifnei melech malchei hamlochim hakodesh baruch hu. You're going to stand before the King of Kings, the Almighty Kings. Can you imagine how much you would tremble when you went before the headmaster? Can you imagine how much you would tremble when you go before the Prime Minister or the King? Can you imagine how much you would tremble if you went before a king like Nebuchadnezzar, who could just simply say, "Off with your head," and hasn't to give any reason or explanation for it? And multiply that, I don't know how many billions of times, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you still feel like doing Averis, etc.? Of course not. So that's what Akavi Ben Mahalalel says. So the Yerushalmi suggests that these items, the items of the Amoraim in the Yerushalmi state, that the three items we've got represent these three positions. Where did you come from? You came from tipos ruach, that's liquid. You came from mere water. So we bring some water along to show that you should be careful how you behave, because you came from the water and you should behave better. You should realize there's more to life. Where are you going to? Well, you're going to earth and dust. So we bring a bit of dust along. We bring a bit of offer along in order that you should get the message. This soldier should realize that life is too short to start just indulging oneself in pleasures which are ephemeral. And finally, we have the Sefer, which represents the Da'alif Nemiyator Osedita and Din V'cheshbon. You're going to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is going to be a final arbiter of everything. So we have the three ingredients. Now you might ask, does this conflict with the other explanations? I don't think it does. I think if you take the two explanations together, or the three explanations together, it makes a wonderful whole. Because the Rishami tells you why we need the three items, but Rabbi Ora Chaim adds to those items some of the panimius, explaining why it's got to be water from holy water, and why it's got to be offered, taken from the Karka Mishkan, because according to the Rishami, you could have managed without that particular type of quality of water or earth. But if you put together that together with the Ora Chaim, we begin to see a more composite picture of why it has to be these items, and why particularly from this particular location. Now this Yerushalmi reminds me it also mentioned in the Yerushalmi of a posuk in Koheles. The Yerushalmi itself brings that posuk. And as my late grandfather Zichron Levracha wrote a wonderful sefer on Koheles, I have a particular affection for it. And on the pasuk, which is chapter Yud Beis pasuk Aleph, we have a pasuk which says, "Uzechayir es boirecho b'mei b'churosecho." Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before you come to the evil days. That means the day of evil days. It doesn't mean so much evil, but the difficult days and the late of life. And the chapter goes on to show the aging process, how people become old, and it's too late to achieve what they could have achieved earlier. So Shlomo is telling us, please remember early on in your life, because your old age comes on very quickly and you will regret all the time that you have wasted. Now that word boirecho, says the Yerushalmi, is used to teach us three things: boirecho, boirecho, and boraecho, which simply means the three items we're talking about. Boirecho means your well, that's where you came from. Boirecho is your pit, where you're going to, and Boirecho is your Creator. Now, the question is, very nice, but where does this drush come from? In fact, it's you can explain this drush grammatically very, very potently. First of all, the word is spelled unusually. Borecha with a yud, rather than one of what might have expected, just Borecha. So the fact that it's spelled in that way gives us the possibility of trying to understand the word in different ways. Firstly, it is well known that letters of words, of Hebrew words, which have a basic three-letter root, can be interchanged. For example, you have keves and kesev, which mean more or less the same thing. There is an argument between the Ramban and the Netziv whether they are absolutely identical. Ramban says it is. Netziv says there's going to be some slight difference, but it's not material for our position because we're saying that there are that you can change the letters around and for certain purposes. Another example is Simla and Salmo. A very beautiful example, which I like to quote from my grandfather, is the word Dovor, which means a word. And there's a famous question. Dovor, which is Vayedaber Hashem, of course, always spoke to Moshe. And yet, it's on the one hand, it's a Lashon Chibor. It's the only language which HaKadosh Baruch used to speak. It's the only Novi that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke in that Lashon of Dibur. He didn't speak to other Nevi'im because Moshe was special. He used the word Daber. And we know that Daber is Lashon Chibor, and after the time of the Egel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu withdrew from Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a Nozuf, and he didn't come to him with the word Vayedaber. On the other hand, we know that the word Vayedaber is a Lashon Kosher, last week said in Baal Oskar, in the case of end of the Seder of Moshe and Miriam, it's Vayedaber. And we find also the Pasuk, the Gemara in Makkos, it says Dibre Etano Koshas, the Joseph in Egypt spoke to us in such a harsh way. So how is it that the same word Dibur can both be harsh and it can be Lashon Chibor? And it means Dibur means to expatiate and go talk at great length. How does it all fit? So Mefoshim explain it in various ways. I haven't got time to go into it now, but you should look at the Yeles HaShachar of the Malbim, or the Malbim at the beginning of Vayikra. Has got pages on the difference between Dibur and Amira. It's very, very interesting, fascinating. But the point I'm trying to make here is that my grandfather Zichron Levracha said in that pasuk, we've got the beginning Divrei Koheles, which he says is a Lashon of Musa, same idea. But we've got Divrei Chachamim Kedorvonus, the words of the Chachamim are like a goad. He said there is an affinity between Dovor and Dorov. A Dorbon is a goad which goads a person in the right direction. Dovor is the type of speech which is intended to get the person to change his position and move somewhere. That is why Dovor is a Lashon Kasher, and nobody likes being told that he can do better, better things you can do. That's why it's a harsh Lashon. I'm pushing you, I'm goading you, I'm getting you to go. I'm not just making a statement, that's Amira. Dibur is more than a statement, it's a directional statement. And at the same time, you only do that for people whom you love. If you see some urchin in the street misbehaving, you just turn around, I haven't got time for him, I can't be bothered with him, I couldn't care about him. But you see your son doing the same thing, you love him so much, you can't possibly leave him, you've got to talk to him. As the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Es Asher Yehav Yochiach. You only do that if you love the person. That's why Dovor means both Lashon Kosher and Lashon Chibor. And that fits in with the word Dorov. Dorov was directional. You're goading the person to go in the right way because it's good for him, it's the right way he's got to go. That's, again, an interposition, a change of the two letters. So by the same rationale, Ba'er and Bora'a can be the same. So the Bora'acho can be taken in this sense as Be'ercho. That's how it works grammatically. So that's the Be'er part. Secondly, Be'ercho. Well, that's the basic possibly you're always allowed to drop an Aleph. An Aleph is a quiescent letter. And since you've got the Yud there as well, Be'ercho, it seems to conflict with each other. We could leave it out. And if you leave it out, you get Be'ercho. So again, it's permissible to take the word Be'er from that word. And finally, why Be'ercho? Well, we know that very often Elohim or Ba'alim are always in the plural. So instead of calling it Be'ercho, we actually call it Be'ercho as if HaKadosh Baruch is our Boreh, but not just our Boreh. We say Boreh Olam, but it's equally permissible to say that HaKadosh Baruch is our Borim. In fact, you have a similar dichotomy in the Shachris and Shabbos. Some people say Konam, and some people say Konehem. So you do find this dichotomy. And Rashi mentions it a few times in the Chumash. So grammatically, it can all fit in very nicely. Borecho and Borecho and Bor and Be'ercho. That's how the Roshani deduces it from here. The question, where are we now? I'd like to quote a piyut, a most remarkable find by the Alei Tamar on the Yerushalmi. In the piyut for Yom HaKippurim in Shachris, there's a piyut Ad Yom Moser Techakelo L'Teshuvah L'Hantosa L'Techiyah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu waits for the human being to the day of his death. He waits, he's hoping your man will do teshuvah. In order that he can turn him towards Techiyas HaMeisim, and he should live forever. And then the piyut goes and gives a number of examples, a number of explanations. And in the middle of them, it says the following: Zos Yovin Kol Yitzir. This every created being should understand. Velo Yaso Yetzer Lachato Leyotzo. And by that means, his yetzer, that is his inbuilt inclination for evil, will not turn him astray to sin towards his creator. What are the three things which Zos Yovin, the Pasuk, the Piyut, the Paiton is saying? This is what Kol Yitzir has to understand in order that he should not be set into evil ways and sin to his creator. What are they? Chasulas Be'ero, Chafiras Boro, Cheshbon Boro. Now normally when you learn Piyut, those people, many people have stopped saying Piyut altogether. But the Piyut is full of remarkable ideas, but it's often very, very difficult to understand it. You need, it's time that Art Scroll came out with an explanation on the Piyut as well as on the actual Davni. It has been done, but there's still a lot more to do. But this is a beautiful example of the conciseness and of the understanding of the Paitonim, the greatness of the Paitonim. Chasulas Be'ero, that refers to the pit into which a person is the beginning, the spring, the wellspring from which he came originally. It's a wellspring of his origin, where he was created from, which is the Be'er we were talking about. Chafiras Bora, that's what I mixed up just now, the digging of his pit, which is the second one, the Boracho. Cheshbon Boro, the Cheshbon means the calculation of understanding that you'll have to give an account before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everybody knows this word Din V'Cheshbon. The famous Gaon on Din V'Cheshbon doesn't say Din Boro, he says Cheshbon Boro. The Gaon says this, you'll get punished with a Din for what you've done wrong. But there will also be a Cheshbon, in addition to the Din as the punishment for the Averis you may have done, there will be a Cheshbon for what you could have done during that time. Had you not wasted your time doing Averis, that you could have done mitzvahs. So you'll get punished with the Din for what you did do, but the Cheshbon will come for what you could have done. There will be a sort of a chishuv, a calculation of what maybe you could have done better. So therefore the word here is not just din boro, cheshbon boro, the cheshbon that you're going to have to give when you stand before your creator. It's beautiful how the Paiton's clearly taken the Yerushalmi and included that here. I don't know how we are for time, and I think I'm not going to go barichus into the whole subject of the Ori Isem. Perhaps just to reference you to the Ma'ari Asad on Ovas, to tell you that the Ma'ari Asad suggests that the number of times that the word Uri Isem occurs in the Torah also represents these three items. One is in Shemos Aleph Tezayin, one is in Torah and in this week's Seder. So it is interesting for anybody listening this week. It refers to this week's Sedra, where you've got the word Uri Isem both in connection with the Meraglim and also in connection with the Parshas Tzitzis. I have a problem with the with Mari Assad, but I think it will take a little bit long to go into it now. I just refer anybody who's interested to, again, my grandfather's Sefer Ko Ephraim. On this Posseg Zecholos Borach, I've added a Nispach, and in that Nispach you will see the whole discussion of the Mari Assad and the problems I've got with his explanation and the calculation of the various Uri Isems and how Masora works. Masora's got to, it doesn't have to work with Re'isem, it's got to be identical. Uri'isem. And one of the problems I've got is that he quotes a posik which says Uri'isen with a nun, and he omits another posik in Chumash which has a mem, and the whole thing seems a little bit shaky, his idea. But it's not for me to criticise. All I'm saying is his view is that you do find the same idea of the three types of behaviour Murumas in the Masora of that Uri Isem. Now, to finish off this particular topic, I would like to quote again from the Alei Tzamar, who quotes a very fascinating minhag which we don't have in Chutz La'aretz. I haven't seen this minhag, but I did, unfortunately, my father, Zichron Levracha, is in fact buried here in Haram Nuchot, and I do remember, although I was not allowed to go here somehow, to go to the actual Levaya, I remember that from a distance, and maybe it was my son's Levi, he was also buried next to my father now there, and I remember they said something which we do not say in Chutz La'aretz, and that is, they say this Mishnah of Akavya ben Mahalalel, and he mentions, Alei Tzamar mentions that there were a lot of people who were malaglegim olel. Many people laughed at it. He said, look, you're making fun of the dead, they're already dead, what are you supporting this Mishnah for? What's he got to do with things? He can't do any more anyhow. It's like Loeg LaRosh. The person's lying dead, then you're telling him, look at your history. Look where you're going to go. How dare you talk to the dead like that? You're not allowed to even have your tzitzis out in case you might embarrass the dead. You're embarrassing them. And they were making great fun and play against this particular minhag. Alei Tzamar says, no, it is not so. You've got to understand it is a very important minhag with a very important makor, and that is that you should know that this is not for the mason. This is a time of musa for the chayim. We're making a spadim, and the spadim are not so much for the nifta. Yes, it's covered for the nifta, etc. But the agra de haspeda deluya, it's mainly that we should weep, we should see our loss, we should improve ourselves. That's the purpose of the haspedim, not for the person who's gone. And therefore, he says that it's correct to say this Mishnah so that the people who are there should realize, like I mentioned before, that the best counterbalance to somebody who's doing Averas or who's in a temper or fighting with other people is just take him to a Levaya, take him to see the Nifta on the at the Tahara. There's nothing more salutary than that, and therefore the Alei Tzamar is saying this is a minhag which has tremendous effect. And going back now to the Sotah where we came in, this is the reason for the necessity for this type of procedure, in order that she should get this message, and that the people around should all get the message that we are not playing with games here, we're dealing with the Ribono Shel Olam, and we're dealing with life itself, and it's very important that we should get it right, and that is the symbolism of the three items. Now, if I can just finally turn to the Sefer of itself, we spoke a lot about the Offer and the Mayim. Let's just have a quick look at the Megillas Sotah. The Megillas Sotah is a special Megillah which is taken from the Parsha. There's a three-way machlokas tanoim as to how many words we have to say, different shittas, but the halacha is 54. There are 54 words which have to be said, and it includes Asher. Now, quite apart from the fact that the parsha is a parsha from the Torah and therefore it has tremendous kedusha, quite apart from that, it's got Hashem's name, and the great play is made of the fact that you have to actually, the Mechias Hashem is a terrible avera, and yet you have to do that because to create the Sholem Bayis, etc. It struck me that this number 54 is a remarkable number in itself. Why? Very briefly, Rabbeinu Bachya here points out that the number 54 is the number for Dan, which means to judge, judgment, and it is the central letters of the Shem HaAdnus, which is the term of lordship. The Dalad Nun are the centre of letters, and the outside you've got the Aleph and the Yod. So to speak, it's that Shem, the essence of Hashem, which is coming here to attack or castigate the woman who has behaved in such a heinous manner. But it struck me again that this number 54 we find very much in a different situation. We find it throughout Megillas Esther. What do I mean? Let me just mention some really quick points. We find through the Megillas Esther there are lots and lots of hidden ramazim of many, many sorts. This number 54 is a favourite number which comes up in the following situations. First of all, it's the exact number of homons that occur in the Megillah. There are 54 times the word homon, which is as if to tell us, homon, you're being judged. Homon, you've misbehaved. This woman's behaved like a homon. There are 54 homons, number one. Number two, if you count the 10 sons of homons hanging on the tree, there are exactly 54 letters. There are 54 letters in the number of the letters of the sons of homon. It could have been spelt in different ways. When you transliterate from the Persian, there are all sorts of ways you could have spelt it. It seems that the Bale Megillah, Mordechai and Esther decided the remes, they were going to have another remes to 54. If I were to ask you, which would you think is the one pasuk which stands out above all psukim in the Megillas Esther? It's the one I would say you'll say on Motzi Shabbos in Havdalah. La'ehudim ha'sa'ura v'simcha v'sasun v'kor. That is the pasuk I think stands in everybody's mind from the Megillah. Is it not significant that the Rashi Tevas of that pasuk add up to 54? Again, you see it. We see it in another sense. Esther always talked about Ovdan Moladati, always with a Dalad Nun, whereas Haman always talked about Dam, La'abdom. Haman was insistent on blood. He wasn't interested in justice. He didn't want din, he just wanted to have what he wanted. He had taiva. He went for the blood. So whenever Haman is talking to the king, he's asking to destroy Dam, Abdom. But whenever Esther talks to the king, she says, I don't want blood, I don't want revenge, I just want what's right. And I'm crying all of Dan Moladity. You see that a number of times. So again and again, we see Dam and Dan. Now the Gaon noticed this, because he's changed the Nusach in Bimei Mordechai v'Esther in Al HaNisim to have only 54 words. We have 56 words. He took out 2 words. What did he add on to it? I think it's the other way around. We have 52 words and he added on, I beg your pardon, we have 52 words, but the Gaon said, no, we've got to get to 54, and therefore he changes the wording at the end, we say Hashivoso Gemulo Burosho, that's right, so we've got 52 words. He changes that to Hashivoso Es Gemulo Al Rosho. Have a look at the Nusach HaGrah and you'll see that he adds those 2 words, and there's a purpose is to give us the number 54, which again is merumas to the destruction of Haman. He also says Hashev Gemul Al Geim. Geim is Gematria 54. Again, refers to Haman, to gaiva, arrogance, and all that's wrong. And so to speak, the number 54 in the Megillas Sotah, it's true to Derech Remez, it's not chat, but the Remez is don't think that this Megillah Sotah is just happenstance. It's been chosen with tremendous precision in order to bring home the message that we do not behave like Haman, we do not behave with arrogance or with lust or with bad midas. This woman has to learn her lesson that she's got to behave in a proper manner. Now that comes to the 54. Finally, just want to finish off with a little interesting point. The Tosfos in Sota Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, they ask, how can the Gemara in Shabbos say that the smallest parsha is Shema, and therefore if you carry on Shabbos, the Shia Fotzor on Shabbos is a parsha which has got no more than the number of letters, sorry, the number, the, sorry, the Parsha of Shema. It doesn't go into words or letters. Now, they ask, but surely Sota is shorter than Shema. So Tosfos answers, it's true Sota is shorter than Shema, but Shema is so much more Shechiach. And when you come to deal with Hatzor, we can't deal with something which is only happens once in a blue moon. We have to deal with regularity. That's the norm. And therefore, Shema is the norm. Everyone says Krishna. And that is therefore the shear which the Gemara takes. Even though it's not quite the smallest. The kasha they all ask is that Shema is the smallest. There are only 48 words in Shema and 54 words in Sota. So what's Tosis kasha? What's bothering Tosis? So you've got to say that Tosis is bothered not about the number of words, but about the number of letters. It's the number of letters. Because in Sota you've got 201 letters, and in Shema you've got 205 letters. And then ask, why should Tosis worry more about letters? I'm not sure I'm more professional than that. Short words may be more, but it's a question of the length of the space which is taken, therefore the letters become important. You find a similar concept in Vayhi bin Sa'a. Doesn't the Gemara say that the size of a sefer for Tumas Yadayim has got to be the minimum shear of Vayhi bin Sa'a? I think it's not 85 letters, I think, not 85 words. Why did the Gemara call it letters, not words? The answer is that letters is what counts. So the kasha from words is not really much of a kasha, and really we understand that Tosis is worried about letters. However, the Hamikra of Amasoira of Rabbi Ruv Margolis comes along and asks an interesting question. He says, look, it's true there may be more letters in Shema and fewer letters in Sota, but if you've got more words, then you've got more spaces between the words. So for every extra word, you're going to have an extra space. So if you add the six more words that you've got in Sota, that therefore means 201 letters plus six spaces, which gives you 207. And therefore, found for Tosis Kasha. What's Tosis asking? Tosis is asking on size, not on the number of words. It's clearly on the number of letters, which is the size of the parsha. Well, he says, in that case, you've got more. What's Tosis Kasha? That's his kasha, and he therefore says that's a good answer to Tosis kasha, but you can't just leave Tosis unanswered. From here, I saw, when I was learning Sota, a sefer called Mincha Charevo, I think it's by Rabbi Epstein, and he records a sefer, Nitei Na'amonim, who says, obviously that was probably before the Mikra and Masura, so they probably didn't see each other, but the same question, the same discussion is found there, and he says that this is a proof to the shita of the Shach and Taz in Yeradeya Reish Ayin Dalet, that Inoch Anami Lecha Chila, you've got to leave a space, but since B'diavad, or B'dieved as we say in the literature word, B'dieved it's good, so since B'dieved it's good, you can't look at the shear from the size of the only the lechatchila, and since the sota b'dieved could be encapsulated in a shorter amount, therefore it's doch a raya that Tosis held that there's only 201 letters, and you don't have to worry about the spaces between the sefer. Obviously, it's a mahudah if you do have the space between the two. But the halacha, he quotes in the Shach and the Taz that if you have a sefer Torah and there's no gap between words, b'dieved it's okay. It's very important for a rov to know when if there's a question on a sefer Torah where two words have been bunched up together, is it kosher or is it not kosher? According to this, you would have a machlokas between these shittas. So, what we are seeing is something else. We're seeing that this is the smallest parsha which is used in the Torah, and yet it's got such potency. It's another aspect of the Megillah Sota. It seems they went out of their way to find something which would be short and sharp and effective. And that, together with the water and the earth, creates the ingredients which are necessary to bring the Sota to her right path.